This is the Breaker.News podcast for the week of September 18th, 2022. I'm Bob Mackin, publisher of the Breaker.News and host of the Breaker.News podcast. Welcome to edition number 256. The Breaker is your source for news, opinion, and analysis about British Columbia issues, institutions, and influencers. Later, I'll tell you how you can support The Breaker. On this edition, headlines from the Pacific Rim and the Pacific Northwest. I word a virtual Nanaimo bar to a difference maker. And on the big deal feature, another installment of MMA, Mackin, Mario, and Andy. Mario Canseco of Research Co. and Andy Yan of the Simon Fraser University City Program join me to look back at the week that was on the road to the October 15th local elections. Is it just me, or does Vancouver's civic election bylaw need updating? The chief election officer went to court because 15 candidates demanded to use Chinese, Farsi, or Vietnamese versions of their names in the ballot. Most of them are not Chinese. A lawyer for candidates whose mother tongue is Chinese, Farsi, and Vietnamese called it a marketing ploy for most of the candidates who do not normally use Chinese names. There were less than 3 business days to file an appeal, and only 3 days for it to be decided. A provincial court judge balked at the way-too-short appeal window and adjourned the case until it could be properly heard. The 15 candidates will get to use their secondary names on October 15th. This isn't allowed in federal elections or British Columbia provincial elections. Names must be in the Roman alphabet on those ballots. There should be accommodations for people whose first language is other than English for essential services. It's important that everyone knows how to prepare for an earthquake or how to pay their property taxes. Vancouver City Council meetings are conducted in English and the staff reports are in English. The names on the ballot should be in the same 26-character alphabet. If this loophole is not closed by a judge or the next city council, get ready in 2026 for a ballot that includes a candidate with his name in Klingon. What do you think? Email Bob at thebreaker.news. This is the Big Deal feature on the Breaker.News podcast. It's MMA time again. Mackin, Mario, and Andy. I'm Mackin, and we've got Mario Canseco of Research Co. and Andy Yan of the Simon Fraser University City Program to look back at the week that was on the road to the October 15th local elections. And we're halfway to the prediction that 2 or more registered candidates would be kicked out of their party or quit the campaign. The Vancouver Greens have said goodbye to Park Board hopeful Liam Menard. They say that Liam Menard gave information about supporters to Mark Merrison's Progress Vancouver party. Information is currency. Knowledge is king in an election campaign. What you know about the voters is key, and what your opponent knows about the voters is key. Where could this go? How far could this go?
Well, Bob, data is dirt. And I think that as dirt, that this is really, I think, something that I think a lot of campaigns are really farming on. And yet at the same time, I think it's one that can hurt, that can help, but it can also hurt. The fact that I think the fact that the Greens were able to, were disclosing this, I think, quite openly about this type of data theft and or alleged data theft or improprieties, that I think represents a certain level of just really the kind of times we live. And yet at the same time, I think the other side of it is, where did that data go? And yet I think that it actually perhaps puts in a light to perhaps those who are using it, perhaps not actually a great one for them.
Mario.
It's an issue on a couple of levels, of course, because if you have somebody who knows what one party is saying, and then that list ends up in the hands of another party, it's a lot easier to customize the messages and to do things that are going to motivate voters based on that. We are bound to have that sort of cross-pollination, particularly in Surrey, where you have a former federal, or currently a federal member of the House of Commons running against somebody who was also involved in federal NBC politics. So a lot of people are going to get bombarded with these lists. What's also problematic in my view is that the Greens couldn't even spell Mark Merrison's name correctly. I mean, if you're going to be upset at one of your rivals, you have to be very careful that you spell the situation in the best possible way. And it's detrimental because ultimately There's going to be more questions about the motivations for that list to make it where it made it. It certainly is a reminder that this is not the best list, the best week to be talking about lists or to have a list or to drop a list or to send a list or to forward a list. So definitely not the best week for those who are organizing campaigns.
Electronic or analog, apparently.
Yeah.
And on that note, speaking of that, the list of captains. This is the story of the week. Stanley Q. Woodvine of the Georgia Strait found this lying around, two pages that listed Kennedy Stewart's fundraising captains. The goal was to raise about $784,000 for the Forward Together campaign. The list shows a who's who of real estate development in Vancouver. There's Ian Gillespie, Terry Huey, Bob Rennie, they're all there. Francesco Aquilini's name is next to a $110,000 fundraising goal. I tried to get in touch with them to get them to talk to me, but none of them responded. The Kennedy Stewart campaign has not denied the accuracy of the list. Team for Livable Vancouver, that's Colleen Hardwick's party, has complained to Elections BC. What does this do for the progressive vote, those voters who would support Kennedy Stewart, who is trying to be Mr. Housing candidate, but because of this list, he looks like he's more or less Mr. Developers candidate? Mario.
Well, the one party that probably stood to gain because of what happened with that particular list would have been Progress Vancouver. And here we are 2 days later talking about Progress Vancouver being involved in a problem with lists. This is the kind of situation that would have been very detrimental in 2018 when the progressive vote was sort of in flux. You know, a lot of people who are looking at Shona Sylvester as a candidate they would support, and a lot of that support ultimately going to Kennedy Stewart in the final stages, the NPA finishing in second place with Ken Sim. It's not that simple this time around. And ultimately, I think it also leads to a significant complaint, which is how many of these developers are actually donating to several parties at the same time. So aside from the fact that we have a list which is aspirational in a way, we don't know if all of these funds have been actually assembled in favor of Kennedy Stewart. You also have a case for people who are close to the NPA and who have received donations from these people in the past, or who are close to ABC, calling them and saying, so why are you fundraising this much for the mayor? I thought you were giving us some of your cash as well. So it's complicated because the nature of the list is what we don't know. We don't know if this is something that has been already collected or whether it's an aspirational goal from here until the election.
Andy.
Well, I think that it's really, a brief glimpse at really the kind of money that's involved in running a modern election in the city of Vancouver. And yet, in the face of supposedly all these circuit breakers towards finance, that we see this type of amount of money that is involved in these types of campaigns. I think that when it comes to this list, it's really a message that perhaps is Vancouver democracy the best democracy money can buy. And I think that touching upon really this theme of really this really the amount of money that's really involved in Vancouver elections, I think that it's also really how the one true captain is aye and goodbye. And what we're talking about is really Captain John Cutt that has passed on. But yet I think at the same time, I think this kind of profound concern about local government and really the influence of the abnormal influence of money and really where it's coming from and how that shapes public policy and really how the city will look after the election.
As of the September 9th deadline, 138 candidates registered to run for office in Vancouver. Nobody filed a challenge against Beijing businessman Fred Harding, the NPA's mayoral candidate, but Rosemary Haguera, the head of elections at City Hall, asked the provincial court to rule on 15 candidates, mostly NPA, who want Chinese, Farsi, or Vietnamese characters beside their names on the ballot. A 2014 candidate had her Indigenous name on the ballot, and a 2018 candidate used Chinese characters. Neither of them were elected. Federal and BC elections do not allow this to happen, but Vancouver's law is vague. Judge James Wingham ruled on Friday that the city's appeal window was too short for the case to be heard, so he adjourned it indefinitely, which means the 15 candidates will get to use their secondary names.
Is there superstition attached to this? Or is there science attached to this? Will this make a difference for the NPA and the other candidates? Or will the NPA end up looking like vote panderers, pandering to ethnic voters. Andy, the Duke of Data, tell us what you think about this, about the record from the two previous elections and what we could see develop after mid of October.
Well, I think that perhaps it also perhaps indicates the sophistication of Vancouver voters that whose language may not necessarily be English, but yet at the same time, not necessarily, I think, motivated by seeing maybe their mother tongue on a candidate's list. I think that it's really part of this is just really how I think this most of those 15 candidates aren't even Chinese. So really how really it I think one way kind of denotes a kind of assumption about Vancouver voters that I think are perhaps it's risky because I think that they are by far more sophisticated and actually don't necessarily vote in ethnic blocks, that they really do pay attention to, I think, the issues. And while this kind of base appeal may get them a couple of votes, but it may also turn off people, that especially when you see, I think, this type of appeal, I think, feel that it's not necessarily sincere, that it's not necessarily one that deals with a multicultural, multilingual city, and it's really just meant to vote pander. So, Ariel.
Yeah, you know, looking back into 2018 and the experience of Brandon Yan, who was the candidate from one city who had his name listed with Chinese characters, he wasn't able to win. Yeah. It wasn't something that necessarily benefited him. Yeah. But his reasons for proceeding that way were pure. You know, he said he wanted to do something that meant something for his family and especially his father. I just don't see why the candidates from the NPA who have nothing to do with China want to have their names listed this way. I mean, where does it end? Are you going to list your name in Farsi as well? Are you going to list it in other languages because you think this is going to get you somewhere? Yeah. And unless there's a reason behind this, that I don't think we should be in the business of allowing people to list their names however they want. I mean, I can understand not having William Thielman because everybody knows that it's Bill Thielman. I understand that. But letting people write whatever they want on the ballot, whether you are Roller Girl or Evil Genius, we have somebody running this year who is called Evil Genius. It's Mr. not Peters? The right course of action. You know, it should be the first and last name, either in that order or it's something different.
Well, even within that, Mario, I guess for me, the issue is why can't we use the name through which you are going to be swearing an oath to the city to be serving? That I think that is, I think, represents, I think, the gravitas of really our electoral process, that it really, if anything, this kind of politicizes, partisanizes the ballot, as opposed to really how sacred our local our democracies are. And within that element, it is really presenting yourself with the name through which you will be swearing yourself to the people of Vancouver whom you will be serving.
Absolutely. You know, we don't see people who say, I want to take my oath with my nom de guerre, right? Yeah. You have a name and that's the name that you're going to be using. And this is why the policy does not make a lot of sense to me. I can understand changing it in specific ways. I can understand not listing all of your names. In my case, having two last names because I was born in Mexico and having three names because my parents gave me three. That's going to make the ballot a lot longer if I run at one point. But, you know, I can just say Mario Canseco. I don't need to put Mario Canseco in 17 different languages.
Doug McCallum won the Surrey mayoralty in 2018 by a plurality. If he loses 45% of his support in 2022, despite all the scandals, McCallum could still win re-election with just about 25,000 votes against four well-known challengers.
Wow. I think it's still a bit of a race. I think the key question is whether they'll be splitting each other up to the point through which perhaps Doug McCallum will kind of walk on through. I think actually, Bob, I think you did the math, and I think in theory that could possibly happen. But then, of course, Surrey is in such a state of flux. It's such a growth pole in the region that, of course, many of the previous supporters for Doug McCallum could have perhaps moved away or died. And how that is going to change that type type of dynamic of that election, I think is really part of a kind of really interesting question. I think the other side of it is really, I think when these mayors are running unopposed, perhaps it reflects the kind of satisfaction within the kind of general electorates of each respective city. And these are not small cities. The city of Burnaby is the third largest city in metropolitan Vancouver, and really, and Port Coquitlam is not small. And yet, at the same time, the fact that their mayors are really winning on acclamation, I think talks to perhaps the satisfaction of their citizens to the work of their mayor. And I think that perhaps sends messages to the other mayors about what they can perhaps learn, that they could perhaps reach out to Mayor Hurley or Mayor West about really how a city could be run.
Well, we can't underestimate the value of a municipal politician who wants to climb the ladder. And I think Brenda Locke has an interesting story to tell, somebody who knows firsthand what it's like to be in that council. The candidates were coming from federal and BC politics, have some baggage attached to them. There might be people who will never vote Liberal and they don't want to vote for Sukh Dhaliwal for mayor. Similar situation with Ginny Sims. What is complicated, I think, is trying to figure out how this is going to play out from the non-McCallum standpoint. And, you know, the last time we asked about Surrey, his approval rating was around 20-something. It's not the best situation to run a campaign. And the fact that we have so many people assembling around Surrey shows that they smell blood on the water. You know, it's similar to what we saw in 2018. Okay, so Gregor is vulnerable. Even before he said that he was going to run, you had people who were saying, we're running, we're doing something different. And then afterwards, it became a free-for-all with so many candidates who managed to get 25 signatures and $100. It's completely different from what we see in Burnaby, where I see a new party that has a five-year plan. Let's get a couple of people in council and maybe we can run against this mayor. But running against this mayor now is going to destroy the reputation of those who want to get something done. So it's very different when you have a group that is heavily engaged in what the mayor is doing than to have the situation you have in Surrey, where everybody's raising their hands and doing the math and saying, we could win this thing with 19% of the vote. That's how close it can be.
Right. Well, thanks again to Mario Canseco and Andy Yan on the Breaker.News podcast on MMA. Mackin, Mario, and Andy, ready and debating the Vancouver civic election and elections beyond Vancouver as we head forward to October 15th, Election Day in British Columbia, in communities big and small. So thanks again for being on the Breaker.News podcast. And look forward to the next time we reconvene MMA.
Aye, aye, and goodbye.
Aye, aye, and goodbye.
Hi, I'm John the Captain. If 70% of our food was fresh, natural fruits and vegetables, and 30% of whole grains, nuts and legumes, and maybe a bit of fish, and we were to exercise each day, then 7 out of 10 of us would not have to die of heart disease, strokes, diabetes, and cancer. Millions of lives would be saved. Maybe even our own. Natural foods that God made for us are best for us. And you know, we'd have no problem with obesity. So far, I've lost 175 pounds. Aye, aye, and goodbye.
Now it's time on the Breaker.News podcast for Around the Rim. We look at news headlines around the Pacific Rim.
In the Taiwan news, Taiwan mission to D.C. signs letter for $3.2 billion U.S. in agricultural exports. Three letters of intent were signed calling for $3.2 billion U.S. dollars worth of Taiwanese soybeans, corn, and wheat to be exported to the U.S. between 2023 and 2024. Due to the COVID pandemic, this was the first Taiwanese agricultural trade mission to visit Washington, D.C. in 3 years. In Kyoto news, Japan eyes building shelter on Okinawa Island amid Taiwan tensions. The need for such a facility comes as Japan's self-defense forces have been expanding the scale of deployment on the southern island prefecture's remote islands, with Yonaguni just about 110 kilometers away from Taiwan amid China's military buildup. The cabinet requested a budget for fiscal 2023 starting next April to conduct a survey on the specifications for a shelter able to withstand military attacks. As China continues to take coercive actions, the construction of facilities in case of an emergency is essential, one of the sources said. In Hong Kong Free Press, national security case against Hong Kong's Tiananmen Vigil Group and two ex-leaders moved to high court. Yi Chuk Yan, Albert Ho, and Chow Hang Tung, appeared before Principal Magistrate Peter Law, one of the city's hand-picked national security judges, at West Kowloon Magistrates' Courts on Wednesday. The alliance, founded in 1989, organized Hong Kong's annual vigils commemorating victims of the Tiananmen Square massacre on student-led demonstrators for democracy.
That's Around the Rim on this edition of the Breaker.News podcast.
Now it's time on the Breaker.News podcast for Cascadia Calling. We look at news headlines around the Pacific Northwest.
In the Oregonian, mother of 16-year-old McDaniel High student who died of fentanyl overdose sues alleged drug supplier. The wrongful death and negligence suit filed this month in Multnomah County Circuit Court by the mother of Griffin Hoffman seeks $510,000 in damages. Carrie Cohen is representing her son's estate in the civil suit filed against Manuel Antonio Souza Espinosa, 25, of Vancouver, Washington. It alleges he was negligent by selling, aiding another in selling, or conspiring to sell or provide fentanyl to a child. Souza Espinosa was described by a prosecutor in court records as a merchant of death. He is suspected of being the source of the pill that a teenager sold to Hoffman, according to prosecutors and Hoffman's parents and friends. In the Seattle Times, insurers don't have to pay for Highway 99 tunnel delays, Washington Supreme Court rules. Justices rejected the state's argument that delays in finishing the tunnel were a type of physical damage that fell under the insurance policy. Justices sent the case back to lower courts for insurers, contractors, and the state to argue further over other kinds of damages. So far, taxpayers are not on the hook for tunnel overruns because the state won a separate jury trial in Thurston County in which contractors sought hundreds of millions of public dollars. The world's biggest tunnel drill, named after former Seattle Mayor Bertha Knight Landis, overheated next to Pier 48 in December 2013 and did not resume digging until 2016. It then broke through next to Seattle Center in April 2017. The 2-mile double-decker tunnel opened to traffic in February 2019. In the Times Colonist, Victoria police looking for driver who nearly ran over two officers on Canada Day. As officers were making arrangements to have a truck and camper towed from Dallas Road, the driver got into the vehicle, put it in gear, and rapidly reversed, causing the officers to leap out of the way. Riga Godron is charged with obstructing a police officer, flight from police, and driving without due care and attention in connection with the July 1st incident. Godron, 44, is a Victoria City Council candidate.
That's Cascadia Calling on this edition of the Breaker.News podcast. It don't matter what color you are, 'cause love will conquer hate.
Virtual Nanaimo Bar, brought to you by Spruce Hill Contracting.
Every week we end the Breaker.News podcast on a tasty note by awarding the goodness of a virtual Nanaimo Bar to people making a difference. A virtual version of the province's favorite dessert bar goes this week to
the 4 million people inspired by Terry Fox, who have raised $850 million to get closer and closer to Terry Fox's goal of ending cancer. September 18th is the 42nd Terry Fox Run. Go to terryfox.org to find out how you can run, walk, or roll, or help.
You can nominate someone for a virtual Nanaimo Bar. Send me an email to bob@thebreaker.news. Spruce Hill Contracting, custom homes and renovations. Find more information at sprucehill.ca.
That's it for the Breaker.News podcast for the week of September 18th, 2022. I'm Bob Mackin. Thanks for joining me. Did you know that on the 18th of September in 1977, NASA's Voyager 1 spacecraft shot the first distant photograph of Earth and the Moon together? Now you know. Send me your feedback, send me your story ideas to bob@thebreaker.news. Bookmark thebreaker.news. You can also find us at thebreaker.ca. Sign up for the email newsletter and get updates to your inbox. For news as it happens, follow The Breaker News on Twitter and visit thebreaker.news on Facebook. You can support The Breaker for as little as $2 a month. For more information, go to patreon.com/thebreakernews. That's patreon.com/thebreakernews.
Aye, aye. Goodbye.
Until next week.